The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody, it is that time again. Welcome back to Afternoons with Mike on the Shepherd Radio Network. In the studio with me, Mark Goldstein. On the line with me, this is going to be a fun program. We have a comedian by the name of Nazareth. Now, let me give you just a little bit of background. He's an award-winning comedian. He's been seen by over 40 million people around the world through live concerts, TV and radio, and those appearances would include Comedy Central, ABC, NBC, CBS, TBN. He's toured with the Righteous Brothers, The Temptations, and he's worked, I'm a little jealous on this one, he got to work with B.B. King, also Tim Conway, just to name a few. And if that's not enough, my friends, he's appeared on many stages, including the Grand Ole Opry. He performs for our armed forces, and he lives in Southern Cal. Welcome, Nazareth.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Mike, for having me. Thank you, Mark. It's an honor to be with you guys.
Well, I have to find out a little bit about you. How in the world did you choose what you're doing, or did it choose you?
Oh, that's a good question. I was a comedian before I was a Christian, so I would say I think God chose that for me. But I was 28 when I started doing comedy, so it wasn't. I was funny when I was little, but I've never, you know, when I was born in Israel, I grew up in Kuwait. I was born to a Christian Greek Orthodox family, and I left when I was 3 years old, so I moved to Kuwait, in a Muslim country, and so I went to school there, and then eventually moved to Toledo, Ohio, to go to University of Toledo, and being a comedian was not something like the Middle East ever considered or something. It was either I'm an engineer or a doctor. That's what my family, all my families are engineers, so... So that was, there was no stand-up comedy. Humor was not looked up at in that culture. It was more of a weakness if you're telling jokes. So I've never thought of being a comedian or what is a comedian does or you can make a living at it. So I came here, went to school, fell in love with the country. I still to this day believe this is the greatest nation on earth. And, a few years later, moved to Southern California. And eventually, I don't know why I decided to run a marathon.
Right.
I was not a Christian back then. I was smoking, I was drinking. And somehow I said, I'm going to run a marathon for 2 miles. And next year I'll run another two. And then one day I'll get to the 26.2 miles and get a medal. So that was my plan. So the night before the race, they have something called carbo load, Mike, where they ask you to come into the Civic Center in Los Angeles and eat a lot of pasta, a lot of bread. So the next day you have enough calories in you to run the marathon. So I went, and at my table just came in Muhammad Ali, the boxer.
Oh, really?
I know. And it's like, he looks at me, grabs my hand, and squeezes it. He goes, "You're gonna finish this, are you?" I go, "Yes, sir, I will." I was like, "Okay, good." And so that went home with that feeling of like obligation, like, "Oh no, I promised Muhammad Ali, I'm gonna run the marathon. I'm gonna finish it."
And so if you didn't finish it, man, he would sting you like a bee, right? Is that what it was?
Like a bee. So I started, you know, the next day I started running, smoked my last cigarette, and I started running, and I was like, okay, 2 miles is done. This is my limit. And then I go, and people go, come on, come on, keep running. Went to five. Then we got to 10 miles, and people say, keep going. It's downhill from there. You can do it. I got to the 22-mile, and my lungs by then gave up on me. I'm not breathing. And I'm running, and this homeless lady, she goes, "Oh, honey, you can't quit now. The finish line is so close." So I finished the race. Like, I sat down. My feet, my toes could not even look at me. I was in so much pain in my feet. But somehow I asked myself the question, what do I want to do in life that if I never get paid for it, I will do it to the best of my ability? And for me, it was making people laugh. I've always loved making people laugh. So the next day I took action. I went to a comedy club in the valley near Los Angeles. I signed up as an open mic night at 7 p.m. where there were 300 people in the audience. Great show. And then by the time I went up, it was midnight with several drunks. They gave me 3 minutes, which was way too much time to do comedy because I didn't have any material. So I just went up and did my jokes that I used to tell people when they say, "Oh, you're from the Middle East, you live in a tent." I go, "Yeah, I have a two-story tent with a two-camel garage." And my sister would just, my brother would take Barbie hostage and I'll send G.I. Joe to get her back. Stuff, just silly jokes that I used to tell people. And the people were laughing. And one drunk fell off his chair laughing. And I knew that moment, this is it. This is what I want to do in life.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's how it started. Is it planned? I didn't know it was planned because after that, I started I started doing comedy every single night and then became the new face at the improv. And I used to do the Comedy Store and I worked with Chris Rock and Adam Sandler and Kevin James. And my career was just booming at that moment.
Mm.
And so my head was big. The alcohol was great. The drugs were great. Everybody wants to be around you because you're doing these big clubs. And NBC was writing a sitcom like Fish Out of Water, Middle Eastern Man in America. So all this was happening. And one day, a comedian invited me to church.
Hmm.
And
good for him.
Went to church, and that was my, I was like feeling guilty. I'm like, because he said, "Nazareth, do you mind if I invite you to church?" I'm like, "Wait, I'm from the Holy Land. We gave you Jesus." You know what I mean? I'm like, "You can't offend me. We gave you, what other people, who else gave you stuff like that? I mean, what did the Italians give you? Pizza. Yeah, right. What did the French give you? The Statue of Liberty. What did the Chinese give you? Walmart. We gave you Jesus. Later, we gave you Homeland Security, but that's a different story."
You're on a roll, man.
But that's what happened. I just decided, I wasn't offended because my family were Greek Orthodox, Mike, but they were, they were not. We never went to church, maybe on Easter or Christmas. I didn't hear about Jesus in Kuwait, even though I wore my cross, and at school I had in some fights because I was a Christian. We're a small minority, but I didn't know what the cross meant and who Jesus was. And I thought God hated me because he knew my heart, and my heart was full of like pride, and I want to be famous. I want to make all the money. But then there was this emptiness inside. So when I went to church, I felt like, the pastor was saying, "Hey, Jesus loves you. Come as you are. He paid the price. It is by grace through faith." I didn't know what grace meant and all that, but I knew something hit me right there. And then I knew that, I felt this is exactly what I'm here for. So, I went forward and gave my life to Christ. And the next morning, I called my management. I said, "I'm quitting. That's it." And my manager was so mad. He was a big manager, Jewish manager in Hollywood. He was very upset, and he thought I'm going to a different network or something. So I said, "I'm quitting." He goes, "Why?" I said, "I'm a Christian now." He goes, "You've always been a Christian." I said, "You don't understand, Chuck. I'm a Christian now. I had something else. I can't honor God with my comedy." He goes, what are you talking about? I said, you won't understand, but I promise you, I'm not going with any other management or anybody else. I'm quitting. And I quit. Mm. A week later, my pastor came to me. He goes, Nazareth, we're doing a comedy show at the church. This is 1992, guys. This is where churches thought the comedy is from the devil at mm-hmm. that point. In California, 1992, nothing would happen. So he said, what do you mean? He said, yeah, we have this event. Can you open it up with comedy? I said, I can't. He goes, why not? I go, because comedy is dirty. He goes, God created humor. Satan perverted it. Why can't you do this for his glory? And then one deacon prayed for me that night. He said, Lord, use Nazareth's comedy to bring people to know you, to encourage believers, and to reach, you know, just to give, to honor your name through his comedy. And right then and there, I knew why I'm doing
it. Ah, that is a beautiful story. God created comedy, and the devil perverted it. How true is all of that? And he always tries to mess up everything that is good and pleasant and pure and light. The enemy comes and he perverts it and makes you feel bad for being what you are, naturally funny. That is, man, what a great story. Mark, you had a question you wanted to ask.
Well, Nazareth, it just dawned on me that maybe your first foray into comedy was going from Kuwait to Toledo.
that's true. I thought about that.
Those travel agents, that's why.
Yeah.
I always pick the bad places to go to, huh?
Those two places are not exactly right next to each other in terms of either background or whatever. Now, Ohio is right next to Indiana. So I know a little bit about it, but not a lot. But my goodness, what a great story that was. And so did you go ahead and take the pastor up on the offer and do that stand-up open?
I did, and it was one of my best shows. 400 people showed up uninvited, and the church on a good day holds 150 people. So right away that night I felt, wow, got a standing ovation. I'm going, wait a minute. I did all clean. I cleaned up my act, and it was wonderful. But the first year of being a believer, I had to be careful what I said. I had to make sure this is the jokes I'm going to do. But then in that year where I was so hungry for the word of God, I was just devouring the Bible every day. Every day I was at church, you know, fellowshipping with believers. So by the end of that year, my mind was cleansed completely from all the dirty jokes, dirty thoughts, and dirty and words. So I have nothing to worry. I can go on stage, say whatever I want. I can, when I'm writing my comedy now, my comedy is based on what's on my mind, what I'm thinking about, what I'm watching. So it became all clean. And to this day, praise God, you know, did it work? Before COVID, what we were doing is then, you know, a few years ago, I started a ministry called Laughter for All. And Laughter for All, our goal was to be able to go to places, including churches who keep telling me you can't share, you know, an invitation, or you cannot talk a lot about Jesus, just be funny and share your testimony. That's all. I said, Lord, you know what? I want to have the freedom to share, to talk about you. I said, people who are in the pews right now, or people who come to these events, they either paid money to get in or they don't know the Lord. So I started this ministry to be able to do free events. And at the end, you know, people come in and they laugh for an hour and a half. At the end, I get to share the Lord with them. Mm. So that was, you know, and God opened the door to do stadium events and amphitheaters and all that. Before COVID, we were bringing 5,000 people for free with their families. And they laugh. They have people like Jackie Velasquez, Crystal Lewis, and Dennis Agostinian, people we hired to perform, and then comedians. Then at the end, I do comedy and then ask people to come forward to the field. And when they come to the field, there's local pastors who, you know, pray with them and, you know, invite them to their churches to disciple them. So, yeah, that worked. I'm glad I took him up on that offer.
Now, when you came into the church, did you instantly go into a discipleship process with somebody in that church?
Yes, there was a couple that I still in touch with, and it was David and Christine Bikaj. And at the time, they had a class for new believers, and I was the only one there. And some people would cancel the class for one student. Those people just loved on me and just, you know, gave me. I just felt hungry for the Word. I'm still, if I can't go a day without being in the Word and without, you know, talking to the Lord, because I, you know, in this crazy world, I need wisdom. So, but yeah, they discipled me and they walked with me. And then, and you know, you want to hear a funny story? Then this is
absolutely, man.
Okay. This is the pastor who led me to Christ and baptized me. Within a month or so, we found out that he was having an affair with his best friend's wife, who had four kids, and he had two kids himself. And that family was at the church with us as well. It broke the church. Mm. The guy that was discipling me, the young man, was having an affair with a soldier's wife when he was out of, you know, serving. And they went up and confessed at the church. And for me, that was just the first few months of my walk. I'm going, wait, the guy that led me to Christ, I look at him, he had this failure. And this discipling guy is the young guy that was discipling me. He was older than me, but I was like, wait a minute, if these people can fall, I better be careful. And I said, Lord, I don't trust myself. And to this day, I'm telling you guys, I don't trust myself. That's why I'm in the Word. I'm like, Holy Spirit, help me in every step of the way. I don't trust. So that was my part of my discipling, is to know that humans can fail regardless of how strong position they have in the church.
Well, I'm really grateful that that's how you took it, man, and that you responded in that way, because many people, when they see a person fail, and you're right, every Christian, every believer, we're all human, we're all capable of falling. But many people, when that happens, and I can tell you of just sadly numerous instances where pastors have fallen morally, and the people under them that are especially maybe new Christians, they just become disillusioned and they walk away and they become bitter toward God. But I'm grateful, man, that you're right. What you surmised is the absolute truth. We all need and are desperate for the grace of God, because if that person that was obviously someone that introduced you to the Lord and that was a real deal experience, if they can fall, we all can fall. We've got to be careful.
Right. And now, you know what? I don't let anybody pray for me anymore. I used to, and I want to encourage people to do that. Don't let anybody pray for you. They have to be someone, you know, a pastor, because the other day, this guy came to me, he goes, can I pray for you? I said, sure. And I think he was an atheist DJ. And he's like, you know, because once they pray for you, start praying, Mike, you can't stop them, right? So he's like, Lord, how sweet it is to be loved by you. Lord, be with Nazareth every breath he takes, every move he makes. If he had the sniffles or the night fever, let him know. And if Satan ever comes his way, let him beat it. Just beat it. And I'm like, I'm feeling like, what are you doing, man? What are you? This is not a radio station thing.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, so that's me. I trust. You know, we're not shocked. You know, Judas was around Jesus for 3.5 years, and Jesus knew that.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that. And, so we shouldn't be shocked at people failing, because the humanity of, you know, we're humans, we're dead.
Hey, hold on to that thought right there, Nazareth. We're up against a break.
The dead thought? Okay, I'll hold to the dead thought.
Yep. Next segment coming up with comedian Nazareth. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd. on the phone today with Nazareth, and joining me in the studio, my friend Mark Goldstein. What a fun thing this is to get to talk to a guy that's a professional comedian, been doing this for over 30 years. And you're doing it. You've done it on stages around the world, on network television. You've performed with celebrities and great musicians, and you're still doing it even after the pandemic. And before we came up to the end of the last segment, we were talking about the things that Jesus knows about us. We're all capable of falling. We are all sinners saved by grace. And that's exactly what you were. And I just so appreciate the way that you saw through the failings of those that were instrumental, really, in your coming to know the Lord.
It is. And also, I don't justify that it's, oh, yeah, because we're human, we're failing. I'm also an ordained pastor, not ordained to do to as a shepherd of a church, even though I love the shepherd radio, but I'm not a shepherd. I'm an evangelist. So what happened is I have a responsibility to put myself away of places that can cause me to be tempted. I mean, when I was the president of the Christian Comedy Association, I was letting the comedians know. I said, listen, we spend a lot of time in hotel rooms. When you take the first flight out, that means what limits the time when you come back to the hotel to be able to watch TV or go on the internet because you have 3-4 hours to sleep. Okay, do not say, oh, I'm going to go to dinner with some of the female fans and stuff. You don't do that. You don't. So stuff like that, like you got to be in the Word. You got to be, you know, you come home, you come from the show. First thing you do, you talk to your wife after the show. If you're married, you talk to your wife. If you're not married, you have accountability pastors that you talk to that will keep you accountable. I've had I used to have accountability pastor. I had to kill them all. They knew too much. No, I'm just kidding. But you always have to find ways to be able to make sure you're not putting yourself in a place where you can be tempted to fall. Because you know you're called. People call us Christian comedians. I'm a Christian comedian not because I do jokes about. You know, how do you get holy water? You boil the hell out of it. We don't do this kind of joke. We talk about life, our perspective as Christians. And for example, I'll tell you this. I am very upset at our, professors, college professors. They're really, my daughter's at UCLA, and she called me. She goes, Dad, look what they're teaching. On day one, this guy is cursing how it's greater for this country to be a Marxist country, you know, and to be a socialist country, and other people talking about all this, like right away, the first day, it has nothing to do with, you know, what you study in communication. They're talking about transgender and all that. So I told her, I said, listen, let me explain to you what this, our country right now is like going to Ross department store. There's a lot of confusion. You know, you go to the men's department, there's women's clothing hanging in the men's department. There's the diapers in the kitchen where there is shoes in the makeup. There's a lot of confusion. So I told her, I said, think of the school professors as those college professors as the manager of Ross, and the students are the new employees. So you go, sir, where do I put this piece of clothing? Wherever you want to put it, don't let anybody tell you. If you feel this is the place to put it there, and don't be a hater or something. I feel this is where we at as a nation.
That is a brilliant analogy right there. That is brilliant. Finding things.
I used it on stage. I just wrote it a couple of days ago. I'm going, I don't know how that's going to be perceived, but I think, thank you guys so much. This means a lot. If you think it's brilliant, then it is good.
I like it. I like it because that is so frustrating to be in a department store looking for your size and someone is hung up, you know, the wrong size and you get all excited. You think, well, there it is. Nope, that's not anything of what it's supposed to be. That's right. Outstanding.
So
don't be a hater. You got to wear it anyway.
Well, Nazareth, what I love about you is that you have a sense of what is sayable and what isn't. And you have a way of taking very emotional things or things where people could be, could get really polarized, and you have a way of bringing humor into it and kind of diffusing. And my goodness, in the days we live in, it is so great. So where do you get your inspiration, and how do you, what is your process to determine what is appropriate and what is just maybe pushing the envelope and what's too far?
That's a great question, Mark. Great. I'll tell you how I do. When I write a bit of material, I always ask myself, what is my goal from going on the stage? And I have two goals. The number one, I'm an entertainer. I have to make them laugh hard and laugh in a way that doesn't make them feel dirty afterwards, where they go, I can't believe I laughed at this. That's number one. My number two goal is I want to, at the end of the show, when I talk about Jesus, I have credibility to do that. So if I divided the audience in the beginning of the show, if I made an audience member go, you know, I don't agree with this guy. I think this guy's political views are different. That's why I try to stay away from politics. I think this guy, you know, that's the way he looks at this life. He's probably racist. He's probably this and that. I don't want any of that. I want the people to laugh and lower their guard, so when I start talking about Jesus, the Holy Spirit can pierce their heart. Mm. That's my goal. So there's material that I would love to do that I can do. For example, I'll give you a joke that, for example, I used to do a bit and where I say, okay, I said, did you guys know in San Francisco, which is a true study, they said they found out that if a man and a dog are crossing the street and a truck is coming at him, they ask people, who would you save first? This is a true study. Who would you save first? 30% went for the dog. They would save the dog before they would save the human. This is a sad reality, but this is what's going on. So I said, you know what? I said, wow, when I saw this one, that's why when I'm walking my dog in San Francisco, I put a hat on. It says, make America great again. At least they would let the dog die and will save me, because all dogs go to heaven. There are 30% more people that will save me. Now, I thought it was funny. I thought it's hilarious. I thought it's not offensive. But I guess some people are like, you know, that's political. I said, what's political about this joke? What is so political? He goes, oh, you're promoting Trump. I said, no, I wasn't promoting anybody. And then all of a sudden I said, you know what? If that joke going to make someone like this complain about it, then, you know, how can I tell them about Jesus later? So I took it out of my act.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my act would be different if I end the show with like, hey, come buy my books and buy my products. And I was funny and this is what I stand for. You know, and that's why, you know, when World Vision and Compassion come to me and say, hey, we want to promote your tours. I'm going to give you money, but all you have to do in the middle of your concert when you have the intermission is to be able to tell about our kids. I go, you know what? I'm selling Jesus at the end. Now, there's other events where I do, like for where you met me at Bethany, I do a lot of crisis pregnancy. I do a lot of nonprofit fundraisers and galas. I just did one for Olive Crist, a huge one. Now, I know my job at that point. My job right now, I'm not going there to give an invitation to Christ after my comedy. I'm not there to I'm there to make their event better because I believe in what they're doing. You know, they're fighting sex trafficking. They're saving the unborn. They're doing that. So I will do my best show, make people laugh so hard. And then at the end, I will start talking about how transition into why they need to support and give financially above and beyond what they came up with when they walked into the room. So that always raises a lot more because laughter opens pockets. So people do. I do that. But when I'm doing my own concert, I'm always very careful. Also with these fundraisers, like I'm not going to push up my political view or whatever I believe it is. I'm just going to give them a show that makes them laugh so hard. And at the end, give ministry.
Why do you think it is that so many who profess to be believers
have not taken that kind of advice into their own lives. And so often I've seen people, and there's one in particular I think of, I don't want to name names right now, but they've made statements of faith and their faith in Christ. And yet when you see them in other circumstances, it seems like when they're in that spotlight, when they're on the stage, that it's a no holds barred and they just say whatever and really end up sounding no different at all than a lot of the other rather bluish comedians that are out there. Why do you think that? What's going on in their mind at that point?
I think they don't understand what, though. I'm not judging them, but I think their walk with Christ is not what it should be, because your first goal when you go on stage is to honor God. We perform unto one audience. And if the Lord Jesus, my agent and my manager, and he's watching my show and he can hear my show, why would I want to offend them? Why would I offend them and then claim I'm a Christian? I'm really doing more harm to his name than I am if I don't even say anything. If you're a Christian in your faith and you feel like your material is not, you know, don't tell people you're a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Do your show. If that's what's important to you, is to please the audience and just convince them, and you feel that's the only way to please the audience is to be blue or to be worldly and to conform into this world system, then you know what? Write harder, buddy. Write better. Sit down and pray and write more and write and have someone watch your material, another Christian brother comedian who can be accountable to you and say, hey, listen, you can't do that stuff. That's not acceptable.
That's good.
So I always question, you know, I'm not being judgmental, but I question your, you know, I'm going to inspect your fruits. And if your fruits during the show is not giving me anything, like, you know, if you can tell me you're a Christian all day long, but you're on stage and said, well, I'm living with my girlfriend and she said this to me, and oh, my show was clean, right? I didn't say the F word, I didn't say any other word, but you were living with your girlfriend and you know what, that's not gonna fly. And to me, you know, if you say you're a Christian and you're saying that, that's really inconsistent with what you're saying. So you're a hypocrite at that point, and really, you deceived your audience.
I agree completely. You know, when I think about the atmosphere of comedy today, it would appear that we're still, as a country, reeling from the slap that was heard around the world last week in the Oscars. What would be your thought on all of that?
Well, you know what? 2 days ago, I was performing in Port Charlotte, and I opened the show with this statement. I said, listen, people, I want you to know, and the church wants you to know, that we have two sets of stairs here. So if you want to come and slap me, be very careful stepping on, because the insurance policy and workers' comp, they have to cover you. So be careful when you get on stage and slap me. Just, I don't want you to hurt yourself. So it's a joke, but number one, as a comedian, of course, that was horrible what Will Smith did. It's funny, the timing. I've been reading his autobiography, and, you know, 17 hours I was in Audible, and he talks about his grandma Gigi, that she took him to church, and he claims to be a Christian. And then at the same time, he talked about his open marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then he uses the F word and everything. You know what? No, you can't do that. You cannot. You're not convincing me. You know, and people, who are you to judge? You know what? I'm not judging. I'm just telling you. You know what I mean? If I say I'm an environmentalist, you know, let me put it in more plain. If I say I love the environment, I'm big on the environment, I'm all for global warming, you know, and all that, and then I am, you know, throwing plastic and burning this and using this and all that, anybody who's not a Christian will come to me because you're a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
You're not even an environmentalist. Same thing, I would say that. But when you listen or read Will's autobiography, he is a master at justifying anything.
Mm.
And that night when he went up and received the award, he was justifying what he did, thinking that people are going to buy it. Now, Chris Rock is a great guy. He's a comedian, and we're comedians. And you don't want to come up on stage and even slap us. I mean, security at the church and security at the club will better stop you. I don't know why they did. You know, I put a video the next day, which one time I was in Poolsbo, Washington, and I was doing a big concert, and there were two security guards, venue security, by the stage, right in front of me. And this guy walks up to the stage. He walks up to the stage, so I'm like, okay. And the security is just, I don't know, they started coming close, but they didn't stop him. And of course, the first thing you do as an entertainer, you look at their hands. Are they holding a knife, a gun? What's going on?
That's a wise thing. That's right.
Yeah, you look at their hand. What are you gonna do? And you look at their face, and you go. And the guy came in, and he's like, gave me a hug. So I hugged him, and I smelled the alcohol in his blood. And he said, "Man, I love you." I was doing a joke about nobody's, after September 11, I'm Mexican. I'm not Middle Eastern. And nobody wants to sit next to me on the plane. I'm like, I used to witness the people on the plane, but after September 11, do you want a Middle Eastern man look at you and tell you, how to meet your God? You don't want that.
That's
so I was
right.
With that joke, and he came in, he goes, I will fly with you. And I gave him a hug, and I just started talking to him. I found out he was a Marine. Mm. I said, hey, thank you for your service. I love you, man. At that point, right when I'm like really appreciating the guy, the security come and pull him out. a little minute too late, buddy. But that's what happened. You don't want anybody to come on stage while you're performing. So
yeah, that's exactly right.
My hat off to him for taking it that light. Hopefully one day we don't find out later that was planned. And,
there are headlines about that right now. People are asking that very question. Was this all a big setup? And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, but it doesn't seem like it was, but we'll have to wait and let the jury be out for that one. We're up against another break here. We're going to take a quick break. I've got Nazareth on the line. Nazareth is a comedian from Southern California on the line with us today, right here on Afternoons with Mike. We'll be right back. On the line with me right now is Nazareth. He is a comedian, and is this guy ever funny? I've enjoyed this chat. Sitting in with me also, my sidekick, Mark Goldstein. Tell us how we can see your humor and get in touch with you on the internet, Nazareth.
Oh, okay. Well, first, there's my website, which has everything in it. It's called, you go to NazarethUSA.com, Nazareth, just like the city. Look it up in the Bible, same spelling. I'm from Nazareth, Israel, so NazarethUSA.com, NazarethUSA.com. And you can see my podcast, which I do weekly, which has, I had Lee Strobel, I had Josh McDowell, I have Chanda Pierce, Mark Lowry, Tim Hawkins, comedians, pastors, the newsboys. So it's an hour of every Tuesday. And tomorrow I'm having a senior pastor of a large church in the Maryland area as well. So it's really fun. But I have a nightly show that I started when the pandemic happened, Mike. Our governor, Mr. Gavin Newsom, like we call him Nas Gruesom, whatever his name is, but he shut the country down on the 18th of March, the state.
Yes.
So I said, okay, Lord, I can't be performing. All my shows were canceled. So I said, what am I going to do? So I said, okay, I can make people laugh and I can encourage people. And people are going to be home and they're going to be bored and they're going to be nervous and anxious and depressed. So I started a show on Facebook. I said, okay, guys, every night at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time, which is 11:30 p.m. Florida time, I said, you know what? I'm gonna just go on the air and just talk to you guys. Just be funny. So I did my jokes for, first day, second day, third day. And after about, like 6 days, which is 6 hours of comedy, I ran out of material. I said, listen, I'll tell you what. I'm going to start asking you questions, and you guys be the funny people. Because I know you guys funny, So I'm going to ask you a question, but I want you to know the last 7 minutes of the show, I'm going to take your prayer request. And I know people, there's about 1,000 people watching right now. They will pray for you. I know there's believers there that want to pray for you. So I started asking questions like, hey, what's the worst name for a plumbing business? And they go, oh, Farrah Fawcett, or the number one in the number two business. So people, lay people that have nothing to do with comedy, are being funny. And while they're being funny, they're you know what? They're forgetting about their anxieties. Mm-hmm. They're forgetting about their depression. And then at the end of the show, you know, they say, oh, can you pray for my mom? She's going through this. Can you pray for my son or my grandson? You know, he's having problems. And they found out within shows later that people going, hey, how is your mom? Can you still not see her? Is she out of the hospital? How is your grandson? Is he healed? So we started this community that I wasn't thinking about, of people that want to be funny for 53 minutes and then want to share their prayers or pray for people for 7 minutes. And they, I mean, we don't pray on the show, but they pray for the next, you know, the next day or the next week. And then the last few minutes, I encourage people. And a couple times on the show, people wanted to commit suicide, couple people.
Wow.
And we talked them out of it. Mm. And we asked, you know, their wives and their family to reach out to seek professional help. But it was just amazing that people who say, I've been depressed and been anxious, but this show, you know, people are sitting like all day waiting for the show. And when I travel and I can't do the show, I feel guilty because they're like, what are we going to do? I'm like, I don't know. You guys can watch older shows or just, you know, wait till we do it again. But I try every night at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time, 11:30 Eastern, to just go on the air, laugh with people, and then at the end, you know, to ask them for prayer requests and encourage them. So that's been great for us.
Oh, that's tremendous. I know a lot of musicians did concerts in a similar way with a similar desire to help people and to get them through. But thank you for doing that.
Nazareth, knowing that God is the creator of comedy, that God is probably, you know, nobody's funnier than God. Nobody can ever be funnier than God.
Yeah, I think some of his illustrations, some of his parables were just great.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, Jesus feeding the 5,000 and watching as the bread keeps getting broken and broken and it's going out in people's faces. Like, where's all this coming from?
Right.
I gotta believe.
Right.
He had a big old grin on his face watching that.
Almost since January, I've been teaching at a church. I do a weekend service where I teach a message on the joy of the Lord, or I teach a message on when the unexpected takes longer than expected. So where I share, I do comedy for like 10 to 12 minutes, but then I give them the meat of the world, the word of God, so they can be fed. Because unfortunately, some people only, you know, listen to a message once a week on Sunday. But so I have to do that. So we do, you know, I read a verse and we talk about it and all that. So
now I know there's a story with your wife and how you've met her.
Yeah, that's the story where I felt by the Lord that I have to share it all the time, which is when I went to that church and I accepted Christ and I said, I'm quitting comedy. I was single at the time. And I said, Lord, you know what? You know more girls than I do. And now that I'm a believer, I promise you, I will not watch pornography. I will not date. I will not touch a woman. I will not lie to a woman. All I want to do is I want to serve you. I want to go out there and reach people for you through comedy. But I want a beautiful wife with a rich father that knows the whole Bible. That's my deal.
Just a small little request like that.
Because when you're a new believer, you still believe God can do anything.
That's right.
The longer you're in the faith, the longer you go, yeah, I know you can do that, God, but I don't expect that. I, you know, just give me this little thing. You don't know. You know, so I'm not a name it, claim it guy at all whatsoever. But this is what I prayed for. I said, this is what I want. So the first year, nothing happening. you know, no, nobody's around. Valentine's Day comes. I don't have any dates or anything. I said, okay, Lord, she doesn't have to have a rich father. You'll take care of us. Beautiful. And the New Testament is fine with me. Another year, I started to lose some hair. I said, okay, Lord, she doesn't have to be beautiful. Just okay to look at. And the book of John is fine with me. The next year, I'm starting to gain weight. I'm like, okay, Lord, she doesn't have, you know, just John 3:16, bring her over. I'll witness to her. And I waited, really. And 3 years into it, my father is dying at Hoke Hospital, Newport Beach. He goes, son, when I die, would you do me a favor? I said, sure. He goes, would you go to Israel for me? I said, of course. He said, would you go to the Gaza Strip for me? I said, no, I'm not going to the Hamas country. I'm not going to go there. But it's my dad. I said, okay, I'll do it for you. So when my dad passed, you know, went to be with the Lord, I flew into Tel Aviv. I drove to the Gaza Strip. The first night, I'm sitting with my atheist cousin, his fiance, and her sister having dinner. And my cousin looks at me. He goes, Nazis, you look happy. What's wrong with you? You're in the Gaza. It's a horrible place. Why are you happy? To me, that's the trigger to share. I said, you know what? Jesus changed my life. He gave me a reason to live. I used to be like an old car that keeps breaking down. Now that I'm a Christian, I'm the same old car, but I'm married to a mechanic and I have AAA. Jesus go through the valley with me. And so he got mad, my cousin. He goes, don't listen to him. He's a born-again Christian. Her sister saved me too. Mm. And I look at her and she's a beautiful, gorgeous woman. I said, would you like to marry me? It just came out of my mouth. And she looks at me, she goes, I've been praying for a believer for 3 years to come to this part of the world. Because everybody here, either a Muslim or the Christian, they're traditional and they're not serious about their faith. I've been praying for someone, a born-again Christian. So let me pray and fast for 3 days. I'll get back to you. 3 days later, she came back. She goes, I'm starving. Let's do it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. God, you pray. And you do that according to God's will, not like you continue to live the way you want and you're praying and waiting on the Lord and you're continually doing what you're doing. If you're a single person and going, I'm waiting on the Lord for a wife, but you're going around dating everybody in sight and watching porn and going and trying to lie to women and stuff. Mm. Guess what? I don't think God's going to answer your prayer. Mm. He's not. He's not going to give his daughter, and I'm not going to give my daughter to someone like you, who cannot, you know, keep the commandments with the Lord. And same thing. So, we got engaged within 5 days. I came back to the States, raised some money, you know, just started working so hard because, you know, at the time I was doing church. Now I'm not doing the worldly stuff. I'm doing churches. And there was love offerings, but there was no love in the offering. So I had to work so hard to raise enough. But God provided enough. We got married a year later, and I brought her to this country. And we've been married for over 25 years now. And what a blessed marriage I have. I love my wife more today. She's a godly, solid. She's better Christian than I am. She's in the Word daily, and she prays for me. And you know what? And her dad was the mayor of the Christian. So she wasn't doing bad either. So God answered everything I asked him because I believe I did it his way. Now, that doesn't guarantee, like, if you do things God's way, God's going to answer any prayer you want. No, but that was my desire, and it was consistent with his desire for me. And praise God. I am so blessed. Prayer works, people. But do it his way.
That's wonderful.
Don't compromise when you pray and wait. Don't compromise when you wait, because God's timing is God's timing. It's the best timing for us.
And what it just goes to show, that good things can come to Nazareth.
Yes, I wrote a book about it. I mean, one of the books, my latest book that I wrote is called Hope in 24 Hours. And one of the stories in it was, Mike, is the you know, it says, you know, I was single. One day I was single. 24 hours later, I'm planning a wedding.
Wow.
Now, have you told me that morning or that when I met her or the day before on my things to do? Today, I'm going to meet my bride-to-be, and we're not going to wait. You know, I'm not going to have to wait and then date for that long. And do it. I'm not saying anything wrong. But it wasn't my, you know, people get up in the morning, and this is what the book was about. It's not an name it and claim it, far from it. But sometimes we get up at 3 in the morning going, oh, the bank is going to call. Oh, I have to pay this. Oh, they're going to close on my house. Oh, they're going to foreclose on my house. I don't know what to do. Oh, I don't. Another thing. Oh, I'm going to get up. I have to go for chemo again. And this is not going to heal. And I think I'm going to die. We always get up in the middle of the night or early in the morning and put all these bad scenarios. But the whole book is about, why don't you add one more scenario? Maybe God can come through with something better that you can even imagine above and beyond what you can think or imagine.
That's so good. Give us your website real quick one more time. We're about out of time.
NazarethUSA.com. They can get the book there. They can know about all the shows, the podcast, everything, and they can book me for their banquets, fundraisers, churches, weekend services, city outreaches. Would love to do it. NazarethUSA.com.
Hey, it's been great to have you here, and thank you, Mark, as well. And friends, we'll see you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.